And within the first 8 hours, I muted my microphone. I go to my wife and I'm like, do you mind if I don't spend your birthday with you? Because New Year's Eve is her birthday. And she's like, why? And I'm like, I've got 20,000 viewers and this isn't slowing down.
Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast, a show about the tools, techniques, and the people in the live streaming industry. Today, I'm very excited to be talking to one of the top 200 streamers on Twitch, Paul, better known as Pester Lee, and we're going to be talking about his journey in streaming, what it's like to have 70,000 viewers, and how him and his community are well on their way to raising $1 million for charity in 2020. So without further ado, let's meet Pester Lee.
I actually took a bit of a different turn into getting into content creation. I never actually saw streaming as like a job opportunity. It was purely, I was in the military for 8 years. I quit the military. I wanted to connect with people and find some friends where I could just play games with, because most of my friends were too old to play computer games and or, you know, married with like kids and lives and, you know, busy. And I just wanted to have some friends. So I actually just started up a Twitch stream just purely to find some friends. And then 3 or 4 months in, it really started taking off. And I was like, hey, I could make something of this. And I sat down with my fiance at the time, but now my wife. And we were like, hey, like let's build a strategy. And we treated it a little bit like a work business plan and said, where do we want to go with this and how long do we give it? And I took it very serious from that point onwards. So to summarize, I do stream on Twitch. My name is Pester Lee and I generally stream in Escape from Tarkov, first person survival kind of simulator shooter, I don't know, immersive game. It's a very immersive game. And yeah, we went from there and I worked really hard to get to where I am. And I went from, you know, 3 to 5 concurrent to now I'm holding around 8 to 12,000 concurrent, depending on the day.
Let's go right back to the beginning. You said that before streaming, you were working in the military. How did you start that transition? Were you watching people on Twitch or were you always interested in streaming? How did that transition from military into streaming happen?
So gaming has always been a major part of my life. I've always, like, since I can remember, I've always played computer games, either from the Nintendo, like the SNES, all the way back to the start to even now. The only thing I knew about Twitch was Shroud. When I started, I knew that it was a guy named Shroud and he had a lot of people watching him. And he was like, I watched a few YouTube videos of him doing PUBG where he'd get like 30 kills in a game. And it was like, whoa. But like, that was it. Like, I don't really remember exactly, but I did a lot of YouTube searching on like how to like start up a Twitch stream. I'm confident your videos came out. Like, your face is so familiar with some of them. I binged watched a heap of videos just like how to set up OBS and all that kind of stuff. And then even over time, like I'd be like, oh, I'm going to add this new thing to my stream. And I'd just be always YouTube searching these videos to build that up. But before Twitch, like my knowledge of content creation and streaming, and that was very minimal, very minimal.
How did that transition happen? Were you sort of streaming on the side whilst working in the military, or was there no opportunity for that? You're not even with a powerful computer.
No, like I had a good computer. The problem was when I was in the military, I was away a lot. Like there would be no opportunity to stream. If I did, it would be like maybe I'd stream for a few months and then I'd take a few months where I'd be away with work. I actually, when I quit the army, I saved up some money to take 3 to 4 months to just focus on myself. So that was playing computer games, making friends and going fishing. And I used that 3 to 4 months to just stream and that, but it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't really to make money. It was, I just wanted some people to play games with. And I actually found some good friends early on who are actually mostly my moderators now. Yeah, and that was the transition. I'm not like your normal person. It's like, I want to make a career out of it. Like I was the opposite. It was purely, hey, I'm going to start up a channel and have some fun with it. It's all about just having fun and we'll go from there.
Was it Escape from Tarkov from the very beginning?
I saw Escape from Tarkov as a really good game that had great potential to grow. I'd been tracking the development of it for a while, but it was very expensive. It was $140 to play the game initially when it was in alpha. And it's still in alpha, but don't tell anyone that. It's like, it's called beta, but it's really like, it's still alpha. And for me, that was like, okay, so I'm going to start my stream. I'm going to start playing Escape from Tarkov. So I'd been playing Escape from Tarkov maybe a couple of days when I started my stream. So it was like, my growth in Escape from Tarkov is with my stream as well. Like I didn't play Tarkov without streaming and vice versa.
I see. And is that still the case today? Is it purely an Escape from Tarkov stream or do you branch out and play some different things?
Honestly, I could play more things and I would have really good viewership doing it. For me, it's like there's really only a couple of games I play off stream. One's Path of Exile. And for me, it's like I put on a YouTube video with some chill music and I just zone out. And I don't really want that. It's more of like a de-stressor for me. I don't really want that game becoming a part of just like I'm talking to chat, I'm focusing on everything that's going on when I could just, you know, chill out, you know, sit in my underwear and just play some games compared to when I'm playing Tarkov, I'm constantly talking to chat, we're telling stories, we're joking, we're having fun. And it is a lot of fun, but it's also very mentally tiring. And I get very tired by the end of my stream sometimes.
What do you think it is about Escape from Tarkov that has made it such a great title for you to stream? Is it the fact that there's some downtime and that you can talk to people, or is it just the fact that it's a game that you're obsessed with and you want to play with your audience?
I'm obviously passionate about the game. You couldn't play as much as I do without being passionate about the game. But Tarkov is one of those games where it's got a good balance between loading screen and inventory management, where you actually can just talk to people. Then it's also got times where there's build up, so you don't know if there's, you know, an action about to happen, if you're just, you know, cruising around. And then there is that action part where everything's like going crazy and there's, you know, bullets flying everywhere and you're trying to do everything you can to survive, and the tension and the victories and the fails are just as important as each other. I think Tarkov at the moment is up there as one of the best games to play on Twitch because of that balance of games that have, you know, action-packed sequences compared and downtime. Whereas you see a game like Call of Duty, like I watched Dr. Lupo play the other day in a tournament, and it was just like go, 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 go. It was so intense. Whereas Tarkov isn't as intense all the time. And I wouldn't be able to stream a game like Apex Legends and that purely for the fact that there's a very short time when you're in a menu and then you're running around like crazy trying to get your next target. So
yeah, I think that's a key thing that a lot of people don't think about when they're choosing a game to stream or a game to main on stream, is the fact that you do need these moments of downtime. If you want to be the kind of streamer that interacts a lot with chat, which obviously we recommend, but a lot of people choosing games that are full focus 24/7 and the only real downtime is in between games when you're in a queue. And that can work for some people, but I definitely think that games that allow a bit more interaction with your chat can help people grow.
So those first-person shooter games like Apex, Call of Duty, PUBG and all those, the guys you'll see the most successful are the ones that are like, you know, best at clicking heads. The ones that most people there to watch them destroy people. I've tried to build my channel up around a community and about focusing on the chat. And I really do talk about the fact that I see Escape from Tarkov as a like a medium or a platform where really it's just like the background noise. The main reason we're all there is just to talk shit with each other and mess about and just have fun like that. It's not about, like, whilst there might be cool moments that happen and I might do some fun things or teach people the game, ultimately we're having a blast between each other, and it's not just about, hey, how much can, you know, we kill people in this game?
Yeah, definitely. I think being skilled at a game is obviously important, and I think you've proven that you are a very skilled player in Escape from Tarkov, but being able to balance that with the community side of things and being able to interact and be entertaining, that's the kind of combo that you really look for in an entertaining streamer. Let's jump right back to when you were much smaller. So let's say the sub 10 viewer range. What was your strategy in growing from sub 10 viewers to say 100 viewers plus?
Now, I was based in Australia at that point. I'm in the Netherlands at the moment. But when I was in Australia, I was like, all right, what is the time slot that has the viewers that I want to have watch me? Now, I know this isn't super important and it depends on the game, but a lot of Australian streamers will stream Australian evening times, which is like the deadest time on Twitch. And I was like, I want to be on the busiest time on Twitch, which is a very difficult task in general, particularly if you're going into a popular game. So I made sure I was streaming first thing in the morning for American time slot. And then what I did was I put all my energy outside of Twitch. I put no energy in Twitch. I would still stream my consistent hours. I would always try to improve my stream. I don't have a notepad and pen. I always suggest this to anyone starting out, but even now it's still important. Notepad and pen next to your desk and write down every suggestion. If it's like, oh, you know, your green screen's playing up a little bit, you write that down and go, okay, after the stream, I'll fix that up. Or they'll be like, your alert's a little bit too loud. You know, if you could fix it there and then, sweet. But if not, just write it down. You might be in the middle of something. And then using all that information to reflect after your stream, like, how do I keep improving it? And those crazy ideas that you have, like, what if I, like, did a stream for 48 hours? Write it down. Because those crazy ideas will be the ones that will really give you those boosts. They won't keep you going forever, but they'll give you the spikes in popularity. On top of that, I put a lot of energy into YouTube. YouTube is not an overnight success thing either. I made about 100 videos on YouTube before my YouTube started taking off, and now I won't say I'm the guru of Tarkov, but a lot of people reference my YouTube videos when it comes to Escape from Tarkov. And bringing the viewers across from YouTube to Twitch, I put my Twitch viewers across to YouTube, and I'm even using that in other methods now, like TikTok, Instagram, and all the other platforms out there, just to bolster each of them. They all feed off each other.
What kind of content were you putting out on YouTube when you were smaller to try and... Were you targeting people that were searching how to do specific things in Tarkov and then hoping to bring them across to your stream?
I looked at what guides were out there for Tarkov, and I quickly realized they were very long-winded and not too specific. So I just made sure all my guides were very specific, to the point, given the best quality content I could give in the shortest period of time. As time's gone on and my knowledge base has increased, I try and put as much knowledge into a video and make them slightly longer, because I've learned that the algorithm of YouTube based around minutes watched. So if you make the world's best guide and it's 3 minutes long, you have 10,000 people watch it. It's the same as like if you had a 30-minute guide and 1,000 people watch it. So getting that balance, you want as much information, constantly hitting the points, but you also need to have it long enough that YouTube will get enough minutes watched so other people will be able to find your video. So it's a very difficult balance to have. Like, you don't want to just sit there with a 5-minute intro, a 5-minute outro, and then like, you know, some fluff in between. You should really try and make the highest quality content you can. But if it's just like a 2 to 4 minute video, unfortunately, YouTube doesn't like that. And there's a bit of history behind that. It took me a little while to work that out. But once you get that good balance, yeah, it does really pay off.
What was the balance between streaming and content creation? Like, how many days a week were you streaming versus how many videos were you putting out? Because I think a lot of people that are starting out with streaming and maybe not able to dedicate their whole time to it because they're working a job struggle with this advice of you need to use platforms like YouTube, Twitter, Instagram to really grow because they're the discoverable platforms, unlike Twitch. And then you can bring that community across to Twitch. It sounds like you've absolutely nailed that. So what was your balance between streaming and content creation?
I'll touch on it. Twitch is slightly moving in that direction of increasing discoverability. Hopefully, over time, it will get even better. That'll actually be a negative for someone like me, but I don't care. I'm already in a position where I'm happy and I'm really blessed that I've got the community I've got, but hopefully Twitch keeps growing and pushing towards the fact that discoverability on Twitch will become better for newer people because right now it's trash. And I flame Twitch for it. I tell my Twitch managers all the time, like, you could do so many things that are really simple. But anyway, moving on from that, go to your question. Sorry, dude. Work-life balance is hard. So if you have a wife, a kid, and a full-time job, and you're trying to start out on Twitch, I would definitely suggest going down the route of having some fun with it, just getting around the knowledge of how it all works. And then I know multiple people that have either put money aside or saved up annual leave to go like, all right, I'm going to test out doing a full-time schedule for a month. I'll take a month leave off work, test out streaming full-time with trying to balance YouTube and all that stuff and to see if I could manage that and how much growth I would get. Is it possible? That's a very big tip that I think people should take advantage of. But it really comes down to how much time you have. You should break down your hours in your day. I was lucky. I took time off. I deliberately said I'm going to take 4 months or 3 months to just enjoy life. And I actually learned these skills in that time period. But and my wife was working full time, so we had an income. But you need to work out exactly how much hours you have and then balance out how much time it's going to take you to make a YouTube video or how much time you can put on Twitch. And then it's not a simple question. For me, I was streaming 8 hours a day, 5 days a week and trying to get 5 videos out a week. And by the way, after I decided I was going to start making YouTube videos, I had no editing skills. So I taught myself how to make YouTube videos. So using me as a reference on how to succeed on Twitch is actually quite difficult because I've probably put out, in my first 2 years on Twitch, I streamed on average 200 hours a month and I put out over 500 YouTube videos, as well as like all the other stuff I was doing. You know, like generally most Twitch streamers don't just go live and go off and that's it. That's all they do for the day. There's emails, there's administration stuff, there's networking, meetings, accounting, podcasts. There's so much. And crazy ideas that you go, how do I make this work? And you'll spend hours talking to people, planning an idea that might or might not work. I really threw everything I had into it for the first, well, still till now, I still don't stop.
That sounds like the perfect segue to start talking about the whole Tarkov and Twitch drops situation, because there's certainly a defined moment, I think, for people outside of the Tarkov community that would say you exploded onto the stream and that you were an overnight success. And I kind of hate that phrase, because especially in your case now, we can hear how much work you were putting in the years leading up to this Twitch drops and Tarkov experience. So I do hate the term, but I also kind of understand from people's point of view, because one day they've never heard of you and the next day you're the most viewed streamer on Twitch. So from their point of view, you are an overnight success because they'd never heard of you before today. What was that whole experience like? Where were you sitting viewer-wise before the Twitch and Tarkov drops, and how much did it affect it?
Give a little bit of reference to overnight successes. So you look at people like Shroud. Shroud was actually like the Reddit king for ages, and he was like, he didn't really take off until PUBG kicked in, you know, like, and you would say, oh, overnight, Shroud's just like the next thing of Twitch, you know? And then same with Ninja. Fortnite kicked in and Ninja overnight, bam, overnight success. But you don't actually take into account that Shroud had played CS like for so much and was putting, like, it was the Reddit king before that. Ninja was playing all these other games as well. I think it was like H1Z1 or something. It was like really big on.
Yeah, and Halo even before that.
And Halo. And then Summit's the same, you know, like these people put hundreds, if not thousands of hours into perfecting their craft to put themselves in a position that when something did happen, they were the person to succeed. And that's how Ninja, he was lucky that the fact that whilst he succeeded in a game, the game also blew up. Like Fortnite is the biggest game of all time. I can't think of any other game that's more successful as a marketing and business game than Fortnite. And Ninja was the person in position for it. I saw that. I saw that Ninja was like, when Ninja blew up, I was like, well, let's say if my game blows up, I want to be in that position. How do I get there? All right, I need to be the most knowledgeable. I need to, you know, be good at the game, because, you know, you need to be at least be okay at a game. You can't be just like, you know, absolutely trash unless you're very entertaining. That's a bit of a different path you can go down. But in all that build up to the Twitch drops event where Tarkov blew up, I had positioned myself over those 2 years to get to that position. So I would make sure I had all the guides out. I would be constantly working on different ideas. Any idea that came out that would increase my knowledge base, I would do it. There would be streams where I would literally just do one same thing over and over again to get that knowledge base up to make a guide. And people would love the fact that I would go to that effort. I tried different things like I did. I was the first person to go from level 1 to 40, which back in the day, at level 40 was when you would unlock all the items from all the traders, and it would take most people weeks, if not months, to get there. I did it in a single stream. It took me 37 and a half hours. And so I was like, that's those crazy ideas that would just give you a spike. So when I say, oh, you know, I could do a 38-hour stream if I needed to, people would be like, there'd be heaps of people would be like, no way you could do that. But I've done heaps of them now, you know. The point I'm trying to make is I tried my best to position myself that if Tarkov was to blow up, I would be the person that would go with it. And so when the drops hit on, it was like 2 days before New Year's, it was like 30th of December, and I started my stream that morning, I just thought it was just going to be a normal day. I was actually meant to do a podcast that day, and I wasn't really feeling that good that day. I was like, you know, might cancel the podcast. And the guys were like, yeah, no worries. And I was just like, you know, I'm just going to do my normal stream of that. And then the drops enabled, and it just took off. Like, I was on like 20,000 viewers like an hour later. And I was like, what is this madness? Like, do people like free shit that much? Like, because I didn't really do giveaways, you know, very often at all. And I was like, couldn't believe it. And then it just kept growing and it was just getting more. And within the first 8 hours, I muted my microphone. I go to my wife and I'm like, do you mind if I don't spend your birthday with you? Because New Year's Eve is her birthday. And she's like, why? And I'm like, I've got 20,000 viewers and this isn't slowing down. And she's like, do it. You know what you need to do, because she's been working with me now for a while. And so I said to everyone, I'm like, all right, this is going to be my longest stream ever. We're going for 44 hours. And so I did a 44-hour stream. And by the end of the stream, I had over 75,000 viewers. And people were just blown away. They couldn't believe it. They were like, this is insane. And I was the same. I was like, this is incredible. But before that, I was already holding 3,000 to 5,000 viewers. It wasn't like my stream was, yeah, nothing. Like I was the number one, if not close to the number one Tarkov streamer at the time. But everyone knew, and this is why it drops worked really well for me personally, everyone knew that if someone's stream was going to be live, mine was the one that was going to be on, because I did all the crazy long streams. And I told people, go to work, leave your computer on, go to bed, go for a date with your missus. It doesn't matter. I'll be live for the next 2 days. And then when I'm finished, I'm going to raid someone that's going to be live with drops. And then by the time you notice, I'll be live again. And so they just kept coming back.
There's a lot to unpack there. But one of the things that kind of surprised me was that it sounds like you had no idea or no information from Twitch or from Escape from Tarkov that this event was happening. And it just happened one day.
I knew drops was happening. I just didn't know it would be that big.
I see. So was there anything that you were thinking or preparing in the lead up to the drops of how you were going to tackle it, or you just had no idea it was going to be as successful as it was?
I swear to God, I almost didn't stream that day. I woke up not feeling very well. I was just like, yeah, this is just, you know. But, you know, when my biggest viewer count before that day was 13,500, and I'm like, once I cracked that 13,500, nothing could stop me. It was like getting pumped full of adrenaline. It was absolutely insane.
What did the drop situation actually do to the whole Escape from Tarkov directory? Has the viewership of the game massively increased even now that the drops aren't happening anymore?
So the way the Tarkov kind of works is it works off a wipe system. So they reset the whole game every 3 to 7 months, depending on the development. And usually after month three, the viewership drops off a lot. Viewership drops a lot. Even people playing the game drops off a lot. The thing is, after the drops event, the game was like boosted hard. Like it was almost like that was the same as the reset of the game, the wipe. So that was the start of month three that happened. And that was 5 months ago now, 4 months ago. So it's kind of like right now is when it's doing, it's starting to do its drop off, but they're going to wipe again soon. So viewership really hasn't dropped too much. Like most people would be like, oh, the game's dead. And it's like, you got no idea. This is like still 5 times bigger than the game was. And the community, the core community of Escape from Tarkov is really solid. Like this game will have people playing it and viewership for years to come until they stop development on it. Battlestate Games is a company that will do it their way and they don't care how long it takes. And there's very few development companies out there that aren't willing to take that risk. They're like, well, how do we make the most money? And Battlestate Games, whilst they're still a business, and I'm not going to excuse that, they still want to do it in their vision.
How did it feel when these drops happened and then all of a sudden a lot of big streamers come across and start streaming Escape from Tarkov? You get the Tim the Tapmans, the Dr. Lupos coming in and sometimes taking the top spots in the directory. And for you, luckily, you still managed to hold on to the top spots a lot of the time because you were kind of seen as the expert. But is that a nice feeling when other streamers, big gamers come in and start experiencing the game that you love so much? Or is it a kind of, oh God, they're going to take away the thing that I've been building?
So Lupo, Summit and Shroud had been playing Tarkov for a good 18 months, off and on, like not large, like blocks of it, but they had been playing for a bit. Summit didn't come across during the drops at all. I think if there was another drops of any, would, because he knows the impact of drops now. I think I have a different outlook. So most people would be like, oh, these people are taking away my discoverability by pushing me down on the list. But see, I don't think of it like that. I always think of it as this, and I guess this is a privileged thing for me, is I go, well, eventually they'll come to my stream. And the way I see that is I've got the guides, I've got the knowledge base. People, they'll bring their communities across, they'll show them this game, they'll go, shh, this game looks cool, I want to try it out. They'll play the game, they'll go, crap, this game's really hard. How do I get better? They'll go straight over to YouTube. How do I get good at Tarkov? And then my guides will be there. Other people's guides will be there. They'll ask their friends. Friends will tell people. And eventually, it might not be straight away, but in like 1 to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, someone will swing by my channel.
I think that's a really healthy way of looking at it, because it's like that saying that I'm definitely going to get wrong, or the rising tide raises all ships or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it is, but if you're getting more people watching the game and getting interested in the game, then some of those viewers are going to filter through to streamers that have that knowledge base.
I don't want to like slander other streamers, but I think that knowledge, that mindset of people being like, oh, these people are only here for certain things, the way I see that is you don't have enough confidence in your own content. That's really how I see it. Like if people are going to come across the category and they're going to look at the game, if they enjoy the game, they're going to explore the category. So have faith in your content, work hard on it, and then hopefully more people will come to you. That's how I see it. The only thing that I think is really dodgy, and Twitch is working against it now, is the whole VOD streaming for, you know, I think there's a few people been doing it over in Valorant, literally just putting up a video and it's not even them there, just to farm the drops. That stuff is, I would be irritated if I was one of the Valorant streamers trying to combat that, because how do you combat a 24/7 stream that's not even there? And
that genuinely was my next question, was asking all about your thoughts on the Valorant beta now that has gone through, and seeing so many streamers with record numbers of over 100,000 viewers. There's a lot of debate, I think, in the Twitch community right now about how legitimate those viewers are. You know, how many of them are viewers making multiple accounts and watching multiple different streams? And then you've got the streamer side of it, like you said, where there's some streamers running 24/7 streams of just VODs. So they're just kind of abusing the system, and you see them getting loads of subscribers and things like that. So it's financially working for them, but it's definitely borderline shady, if not should be against terms of service. And we've seen Twitch now stand in and say that these 24/7 VOD replays are against terms of service. So what are your thoughts on where the line can be drawn between this being a good marketing opportunity for companies, because it obviously was very successful for Valorant and it was very successful for Tarkov, versus the opportunities that people abuse then to push down more legitimate streamers?
Well, the marketing person at Riot is an absolute brilliant person, because what's that thing? It's like, you know, when you want to check something out, but you can't because you don't have access to it. The fact that they made it so they teased everyone with streamers, big name streamers, being able to play it without drops, and then they make it so only the big name streamers have drops, and then just making people really, really keen to do it. Now, there's like, there's blue balling people, you know, and there's like, you know, there's a bit of teasing and that, but you can't go too far with it. So I think the marketing side of that was brilliant. However, is it healthy? Valorant's going to be a free-to-play game, yet there is thousands and thousands and thousands of Twitch channels being created to farm keys to sell them on eBay. Now, there's like accounts being sold on eBay for like $200 for a free game just so you can play on the beta. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, if I was like broken or had a way of making money, that'd be something I'd do. It's like, I'll just sign up five different Twitch accounts or five different League of Legends accounts and try and farm some keys to sell them on eBay. Like, I think if Twitch allows that to happen in the future, I think it needs more guidelines for the fact that it's going to be scary for what every game decides to do in the future when it comes to drops, because it's a marketing ploy that's unprecedented with how Riot and Valorant have done. It's insane, mate. Like, I think the drop system is a really cool system to bring people to Twitch, but it's just a matter of, it's still kind of undiscovered areas. Like, we don't know where it's going to go in the future. I've got hopes for it to be implemented well, but it's just a matter of, we'll have to wait and see.
It's one of those things where the marketing behind it was so successful that it's being abused. Like, there's so much hype and demand to get a key to be able to play this beta because all the big streamers are playing it and you want to play it, that people are going to find a way to abuse that system. And really, I think it's down to Twitch to be able to work out how they can restrict that or best control it. Let's change gears for a bit and talk about your plans in 2020, because I've seen and I've heard about your charity drive. Could you explain a little bit about what that is and why you've decided to disable personal donations on your Twitch stream?
Back when I was in the army, or before I joined the army even, I wanted to do something where I would help people, like in the community. I wanted to be a firefighter, but I actually lost my license to drink driving when I was 20, 21. And in Australia, you can't be a firefighter for 10 years after you lose your license for drink driving. So I was like, all right, I'm going to join the army instead. And I joined the army to help people. By the way, don't drink drive. It's stupid. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever done, and I don't really drink anymore since. Anyway, I joined the army, and I spent 8 years in the army, and my whole intention was to help people. When I left the army, I still wanted to help people, and that's why I became a firefighter. After I started doing full-time streaming, because my wife's job moved and I had to quit being a firefighter, I still wanted to help people. And in 2019, I did a charity event with Starlight, called Game Changers in Australia, and we raised $26,000 in a month. And I thought, that's incredible. Let's start looking at an idea that for 2020, we'll do something big for charity, but we didn't know what yet. My wife and I sat down, we brainstormed some ideas. I had this really cool idea, actually, because I had a lot of like PlayStation games and old consoles and stuff just sitting around. I'm like, why can't I just send these into Starlight and we'll see if anyone else has old games and that, and we can send them all into Starlight and then they can distribute them to the hospitals for the kids to be able to play on all the consoles and that. it was all great until they got to the point where the sanitary requirements to be having all this stuff put in hospitals, and it just got logistically messy. So I said, well, let's just try and raise a heap of money. And the reason why I picked Starlight, which is one of the main questions I get, was one of my mates, his little sister passed away to bowel cancer, and Starlight were very close to the family when that was all going on, and particularly for his mother. She was going through tough times, of course, and Starlight were there for her. And I thought, well, if they're willing to do that kind of stuff, and I did all my research, make sure the money gets spent properly and they do all the good stuff. So for me, it was a very easy decision to want to help people in that way. To remove my donations entirely, it was a bit of a maths equation, to be honest. I said, how much money would I really lose when I could do a big impact to help people? And this was before the drops event, so I can't remember how much I was making a month off donations. It was probably a couple of $1,000 a month. But after I saw the impact on how much we raised in a month, I was like, well, if I sacrifice a few $1,000 a month and we can raise $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a month, it's worth it, you know. I was sitting very healthy with subs, like 5,000 subs, and, you know, I still get ad revenue and all that. I was playing around with the idea of running ads on my channel to make up for lost money and donations, and I spoke to my chat about that. They were all happy with it, which is also why during the drops event, they let me spam the ad button nonstop throughout the whole drops event. So when you got 100,000 people and you've got literally a print money button, you know, it's pretty cool to be able to press it. They would let me press it every raid. Like, it was like every 15 minutes, press the button. They're like, give us ads, you know. So that was actually a really life-changing week. Like, that, I can't remember how much money I made that week, but it was pretty similar to what I would make in a year, you know. Like, it was a pretty crazy week.
I think that's testament to you as a person, the fact that this was before the big drops event. I know you were still, in terms of viewership, you're still very high up and you still had a lot of viewers, but you decided to dedicate your whole year's worth of donations effectively to a charity. I think that's master testament. We'll definitely link in the podcast show notes your donation drive, so that if people do want to contribute after listening to this interview, they can definitely do so. Let's talk a little bit about family and friends and your job, because although streaming's been around for a few years now, I certainly, not even as a streamer, but more as a content creator, sometimes struggle with talking to people that don't really understand how it can be a job. But it is a job, and I find I probably put in more hours than I did in any full-time job that I did before. What are the biggest challenges you face being a full-time streamer or content creator, and how do you explain those to people that don't really understand what streaming is?
I try and have fun with it. So if it's someone who thinks a little bit like unsure about what's going on, I just say I'm an online male entertainer, and that really like piques their interest. But look, my dad doesn't really understand. He's fairly old school, you know, as a mechanic, and he's a mechanic still. He loves working with cars. So my dad just always, every time I call dad, he's like, "How you going, son?" I'm like, "Good, dad." He goes, "You still doing that computer stuff?" I'm like, "Yep." He goes, "You happy?" I'm like, "Yep." "Still making money?" I'm like, "Yep." He goes, "That's all I care about." I'm like, it's, to him, that's kind of how I think it'll always be. But, you know, like, it's where the future's going. I think interactive entertainment on demand is going to be bigger and bigger as the future goes on, and mainstream television will die off more and more. We'll get more stuff like Netflix, so all your on-demand stuff. All that stuff will become more and more popular. And the best thing about Twitch streamers or content creators and streamers like YouTubers and Twitch and Mixer and et cetera, is the best part is they are targeted to a certain audience. So you can come to my channel and you don't even have to enjoy me. You can go somewhere else. Like, there is that many channels out there, you can find one tailored for you. It just might take you a little bit because the discoverability is not there yet. But when it is, you'll be able to find people that you'll like to surround yourself around, and you'll hang out there all the time. And I think that's where the future of entertainment is going. To explain it to people is still quite difficult. A professional gamer kind of works a lot better these days.
But it's so much more than that, isn't it? Like, if you think about how many different hats you're having to wear as a Twitch streamer, take out all the content creation and things that you're doing on YouTube and TikTok and Instagram and podcasts and all those kind of things. Just as a Twitch streamer, yes, you are playing games professionally, but you have that whole chat interaction. You have to be on top of this whole technical setup of, are you dropping frames? Is your audio level good? Am I keeping up with charity donations, subscribers, and all that kind of things. You're basically a one-man production show whilst still trying to be one of the top 5% gamers playing a certain game.
Yeah, and you're also a marketer, you're an accountant, you're a, like, I'm starting to look at, like, you know, outsourcing a lot more stuff, but for the first few years, I didn't outsource anything. It was just me and my wife sorting it all. So, yeah, it's many hats. I honestly think that if I was to quit streaming today and tomorrow, I could walk into nearly any job that needed a marketer and someone in advertising, and I'd walk over a lot of people with my knowledge these days. I understand, like, I feel like I've got a very good understanding of what sells, what doesn't, what people like and what people don't like, and what's cringy and what's sellout and what's cool. You know, like, it's something like, and you would experience all this, man. Like, it's just keeping up with times that move so quick, and you have to keep on top of the what the trends are as well. Like, a simple example is this year was meant to be about traveling around Europe for me. And when the coronavirus started, everyone was like, oh, yeah, whatever, it's this coronavirus. And then I was like, I really want to get as many trips as I can in before we get stuck and we can't do anything. And so we planned all these trips and we're like, all right, let's try and get to Portugal. And I was in Portugal and I could already tell the tone of people was changing. People were like, oh, what are you doing in Portugal? They're going to go into lockdown. And as soon as people started saying that, I said to my wife, I'm like, after this trip, we're not doing anything until it all blows over. Because it was like, the mood was shifting. Whilst it might be perfectly fine for me to travel to certain places right now, which I'm pretty sure I could probably go to Sweden. I think they're pretty good at the moment with like their borders and that. The issue would be is like the public perception would be, you're not meant to be doing that. Don't do that. And I agree. I don't think I should be doing that. But I'm just saying you have to be on top of all this stuff going on. And it's not as simple as just pressing a go live button every day and that.
You mentioned in that that you've started to outsource some things, but for the first few years, you were doing literally everything. What does a day in the life of Pastilli look like now, and how does that compare to 2 years ago?
I do a lot more meetings now. So for the first 2 years, my day would, when I was in Australia, I'd get up at 6 a.m. I would stream until about 2 or 3 o'clock. And after about 3 o'clock, so it was about 8-9 hour stream every day, I would go outside. I didn't care what I did. I'd go across to the post office. I would and check my PO box. I'd get the dog, go for a walk, get outside. That was my number one rule. Always outside once a day. Then after that, I'd get back home. I would sometimes have a very short nap, and then I would just edit YouTube videos, handle emails, all the administration side of things, all the way to about midnight to 2 a.m. Sometimes I'd finish before midnight and I'd be like, you know what, I'm going to play a game. And I'd like play a game of Apex Legends and, you know, do that for like half an hour to an hour. And I'd try and get to bed before midnight, but usually it was about 1 a.m. and I'd be back up at 5:45 ready to go again. I slept for about 5 to 6 hours a night for 2 years. And now I'm in Europe and I've started to outsource. My cousin's taken over a lot of the editing. I'm looking at outsourcing to some editors soon, which I'm in the process of organizing now. I've started to bring on like a bit of a team that I'm putting together of people that help me with different things. We're looking to outsource our accounting and all that. So a lot of the stresses and that are slowly going away. And I'm hoping to free up more time to do stuff like this podcast where I love talking to people. It's just hard because a lot of the conversations I have these days with such a big viewership is very one way. So putting more time and effort into making sure I can do some podcasts, either for myself or with other people, doing the things I enjoy more, and then making sure I get on top of my health again. So I know you can see it, but there's an actual exercise bike behind me, and I'm going to start doing Zwift streams where it's like a program on the computer where you can ride a bike and you actually ride in a virtual world. And I'm going to actually start my streams doing that for an hour so I actually can exercise on stream talking to people, and if people want to join me they can, if not sweet. And then after the hour I'll put an extended intro on, have a quick shower, and I'll be back 10 minutes later to start playing some Tarkov.
That sounds like a great idea. Is anyone else doing that?
The only person I've known who's done Zwift on a large scale is Giant Waffle, and apparently he did it so much he got too fit, like he was eating like 6,000 calories a day to try and, you know, like maintain his body weight. So
I think fitness is going to be a huge area of Twitch or online entertainment in general, because it's just so big on YouTube. Bodybuilders or marathon runners or all these kind of sports, I think they're going to come across to streaming as more and more technology allows you to. What do you think are some of the things that are coming up in the next few years in terms of live streaming, things that people should be looking out to do, or just in general things that interest you?
So I think that Twitch is going to move more and more away from gaming. I honestly think that. I think games, it won't peak, But what will happen is, as long as new games come out, games will kind of sit where it is, might get a little bit bigger as generations get, you know, go on. And like the, you know, quite morbid about it is people get older and we have less older people that didn't know about gaming. And when we have more young people growing up with gaming, Twitch will grow with that. But the future of Twitch is in IRL, music, just chatting streams, all those kind of things. I think outdoor streams are going to be the future, or something along like the lines of music as well. Because I think once we have good internet everywhere we go in the world, I think there's no limits. You know, you'll find people that are like doing Formula One racing and it'll be live streamed from their, what do you call a cockpit in a Formula One car? I don't know. You know, from the driver's seat. The first people that think of really creative ideas out there will be very successful in that field. I started streaming doing fishing. You know, my little mobile phone, I had it on a phone holder that you'd normally have in a car. I just whacked it on my boat and then I was just like fishing. And I had 30 viewers. I'd play Tarkov to 5 viewers and I'd go fishing and I'd have 30. And I would, people loved it. When I get back to Australia, it's the first thing I'm doing. People already know about it. I'm going to go buy a boat and get it all wired up with cameras in every angle and I'll be fishing.
That sounds amazing. When do you go back to Australia? Is it just post-coronavirus or have you got more time?
January. It should be January. My wife's visa will run out at the end of January, so we'll probably head back around then. Hopefully we'll be able to find somewhere close to the border so I can get a boat and go fishing.
Let's end with just one question that I like to ask a lot of guests. What do you wish you had known when you started out as a streamer that you now know today that could have accelerated your growth or made life easier or more enjoyable?
I think with the current climate of how everything's going, you need to find a good balance of Twitch streaming and finding external growth, and then picking subjects or if you're doing YouTube, you need to find topics that haven't really been done to death or could be improved on, and doing it to the best detail you can without going over the top. You know, invest a certain amount of time, make stuff that's discoverable on a discoverable platform, use that viewership to try and push it across, and always, even today, I'm still in trying to improve my stream. The smallest little things I'll always try and increase. I'll write notes down. I've got documents of like things I'm working on. Write down everything, every single idea you have. It's all about creativity. It's not about consistency. I know people out there will be like, all you have to do is be consistent. There's people out there that have streamed 500 hours a month, or not 500, like 200 hours a month consistently for a year. And they're still not growing because it's all about getting discovered and growing it from discoverability and always trying to be the best you can be. And honestly, just try and be a good person. Don't focus on the negative stuff. Focus on the positive stuff. Surround yourself with positive people.
I think tons of value in this for everybody listening. And I really, really appreciate you coming on, Pastely. Where can we send people to find more about you, to watch your streams, your YouTube?
YouTube.com/Pastely and twitch.tv/Pastely. It's all the stuff you'll find is there. I think we're at $730,000 raised for Starlight in just 4 months. We raised $270,000 in 18 hours the other day. So that was an insane stream. And we'll be pushing hard to try and get that million goal by the end of the year. But I think we'll do it a little bit earlier. But that's still good. Still winning.
As always, we'll have links to everything we talked about in this episode in the podcast show notes, so be sure to check your podcast app of choice for those. Thank you again, Pastely, for coming on and sharing your journey in such detail. Listeners, thank you for listening. Your call to action this week is to just share this episode with one streaming friend that you would think would enjoy this podcast. Not much to ask, I don't think, for 45 minutes of value, and it will really help me grow this podcast and continue to get amazing guests like Pastely on again in the future. Thanks as always for listening, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Peace.